Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, Good, Bad, and Crazy Martinis, and a very sad but important tribute at the end of our podcast today. But let's start with the good martini. Jim, this is the CNN Money version of the story that broke on Wednesday afternoon. The ambitious but little-watched Al Jazeera American News Channel will shut down April 30th after a little more than 2 years on television. The news was announced at a sudden staff-wide meeting on Wednesday afternoon. As many as 700 staff members could lose their jobs, according to sources at the company. Turns out that they never got a lot of viewers. They did a lot of work, but it's important to get viewers, apparently. And they only got between 20,000 and 40,000 a day. And in the CNN version of the story, it says CNN, Fox News, and other cable news channels have well over 10 times as many viewers. So that means CNN does, which means Fox has way more than that. And interestingly, you don't think about this when why a television channel folds, but when it's owned by a nation in the Middle East, it does. The channel's end appears to have been prompted by the plunging price of oil, which dropped below $30 a barrel on Tuesday for the first time in 12 years. That's significant because Al Jazeera America is owned by Al Jazeera Media Group, which is in turn owned by the government of Qatar. So Al Gore sold this for $500 million a couple years ago. He's laughing all the way to the bank. But Jim, when you look at who's the honest broker in the media, not a lot of people turn into Al Jazeera.
Yeah, money well spent, Al Jazeera and Qatar. Right? Nice call. Now, here's the thing. This is our good martini. People say, oh, how can you celebrate people getting laid off? Let's face it, conservatives are not really celebrating about this morning so much as they're saying, oh, yeah, there was Al Jazeera America. That old saying, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a sound? If a television network that basically has no one watching ceases operation, does it really stop? And I'll make a quasi-half defense of Al Jazeera. Let's just say controversial coverage starting after 9/11, when most Americans kind of noticed it, and the perception that it was particularly rough on demonizing George W. Bush, and certainly nowhere near as tough on al-Qaeda and Islamists as we'd like them to be, it got the reputation as terrorist TV. Now, whether that was fair or not, I think it's safe to say Al Jazeera America wasn't that bad. It wasn't that overtly, here's the upside of ISIS you may not have heard, tone to it. And some quasi-respected journalists like Joey Chen and Ali Velshi, who used to yell at me on CNN, went to go work for them. Now, I could gloat and say, ha-ha, Ali's out of a job. But I'm not going to do that because that would be wrong, Greg. Really would be wrong. But I think it just kind of is very revealing that what Al Jazeera America ended up doing was a lot of, like, here's why things in America stink journalism. And people said that they weren't actually bad or unfair or propagandistic. I mean, you could do stories on pollution or things like that, but it kind of struck me as almost a Middle East version of RT TV, Greg, the Russian propaganda channel. I mean, you're just constantly giving you, here's why things stink in America. And lo and behold, Americans didn't like watching a foreign-produced news network telling them why their country stinks, whether it was factually accurate or not. So, again, will we miss Al Jazeera America, Greg? I don't know about you. I missed it entirely because I never watched it.
Same here. You can toggle past it sometimes when you go through the news channel section on cable, but I can't say I ever stopped there.
I think maybe during one of the riots in Cairo or something, the uprising, I tuned into it because I thought they might have had better coverage, and it really wasn't all that better. I also want to say the night of the shootings in Paris committed by ISIS, I clicked over and they weren't covering it. I don't know if it was because it was like late at night on a Friday and there was nobody left in the studio to do it, but it was really astoundingly like, your news network? Doesn't that deserve air quotes? Then again, you could probably say a lot of networks deserve that. But farewell, Al Jazeera America. Our lives will pretty much be the same as they were before without you.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And this one really is bad, and obviously many of them are. But Jim, you mentioned yesterday in the response to the President's State of the Union that at no point in his speech did he ever alter the text to mention the fact that at the time of the speech, Iran was holding 10 American sailors who were taken from their patrol boats, and never mentioned it at all. And it's partly because perhaps that we knew it was likely that they were going to be released in the morning. He didn't want to endanger that. But ultimately, we found out later on that the Iranians basically arrested our sailors. There's video of them with their hands on their heads, some of them on their knees. The one a female sailor had to wear a hijab. And then the worst part of it was that perhaps the leader of one of these patrol boats was forced to make a confession on video. And here's part of that.
It was a mistake. That was our fault. And we apologize for our mistake.
And a lot of people pointing out that the video of the Americans in detention and on their knees is a violation of the Geneva Conventions. We'll let everybody else sort that out. But John Kerry yesterday at National Defense University, harsh words for the Iranians, right? No, not at all.
I want to thank the Iranian authorities for their cooperation and quick response. These are always situations which, as everybody here knows, have an ability, if not properly guided, to get out of control. And I'm appreciative for the quick and appropriate response of the Iranian authorities. All indications suggest or tell us that our sailors were well taken care of, provided with blankets and food, and assisted with their return to the fleet earlier today.
Jim, obviously the administration is hailing this as a great example of diplomacy and how tighter relations can prevent this from escalating and blah, blah, blah. But this just looks like we're rolling over for the Iranians one more time.
You know, Greg, our female sailor, they gave her a head covering so that her ears wouldn't get cold. It was just so polite. They were really insistent that she put that on her head. I was thinking about this, Greg. The only thing about this that is surprising, I mean, the moment you heard 10 U.S. sailors are held by Iran, you kind of knew this is bad news. And the fact that Obama chose to not mention it at all in the State of the Union, not that surprising. He really believes that if he doesn't treat something like it's a big problem, people will think it's not a big problem. The constant effort, the fact that there was no bellicose language, there was no indication of harsh consequences or really any consequences to the Iranians if they didn't release the sailors immediately. The increasingly BS-sounding story that, oh, it was a mechanical failure and we just happened to drift into Iranian waters, does not add up. And the only thing that surprised me about how this unfolded, Greg, is that the Iranians didn't push their luck and hold them even longer. The only silver lining here, as embarrassing and humiliating as this is for the United States, to see images of their sailors kneeling, hands on head, captured, held at gunpoint, more than a little bit reminiscent of the last time Americans were stuck in Iran. They didn't hold on longer. You'd like to think because the Iranians realized that, well, one, if you end a democratic presidency with a hostage crisis, then Americans will think the news is in reruns. It'll just be a little too much of a direct echo of the past to go that route. Maybe they recognize that at some point the Americans would, even the Obama administration would have to be roused and say, hey, this is unacceptable. You got to release these guys. Having said that, they certainly have milked this for all the propaganda values at home as they possibly could. They have violated the Geneva Conventions. We shouldn't be the least bit surprised by that. An ugly chapter, and the only good news is this was a relatively short, painful chapter of U.S. diplomatic begging the Iranians and feeling and appearing absolutely powerless.
Yeah. Heard one person on the radio this morning worried about John Kerry having a sore shoulder from patting himself on the back for handling this so well.
You think John Kerry would be a little more touchy about American men in boats.
On to the crazy martini now and on to the Democratic presidential campaign trail. Obviously, there's the Republican debate tonight that I'm sure we'll talk about on Friday. But the big news this week on the Democratic side is that Bernie Sanders seems to be surging in both Iowa and New Hampshire. The latest polls have him ahead by a few points in Iowa and perhaps double digits in New Hampshire. And so the Clintons are pulling out all the stops. You got Chelsea Clinton on the stump now. She's going after Bernie Sanders, apparently thinking that single payer, Jim, is not liberal enough or somehow is common cause with the Republicans. Here's how she tried to explain it.
Senator Sanders wants to dismantle Obamacare, dismantle the CHIP program, dismantle Medicare, dismantle private insurance. Now, the Republicans in Congress have voted against the Affordable Care Act 55 times. Right? Not because they want to replace it with something, because they want to get rid of it. So I worry that if we give Republicans Democratic permission to do that, we'll go back to an era before we had the Affordable Care Act that will strip millions and millions and millions of people of their health insurance.
Yeah, Jim, the Republicans and Bernie Sanders, they are totally in lockstep on how to change health care.
I can take this apart piece by piece. First thing, that it's not the Republicans want to repeal Obamacare and do nothing. We have our own ideas. We'd like to see tort reform. We'd like to see you be able to buy health insurance across state lines. We'd like to repeal the medical device tax. There's lots of stuff we'd like to do. the Democrats like to pretend they don't exist. But actually, there was a lead item in the Morning Jolt, and I put it in the corner today, Greg. And you know that I have a giant exposed nerve when it comes to Chelsea Clinton, yes. Right? You know, usually it's about puff pieces, and people talk about how fantastic, what an amazing young woman she is. When in fact, besides being the most ludicrously overpaid and underproductive NBC News reporter of all time, and having learned her standards for accuracy from Brian Williams very well, Chelsea Clinton, in this one, like she's being put out there as, I put out the term attack dog, Greg, and naturally on Twitter, somebody thought I was making fun of Chelsea's appearance.
Oh boy.
But so here she goes out here, and she goes to make this attack. And here's the thing. Now look, listeners to the Three Martini Lunch know, we do not often rush to the aid of Bernie Sanders, right? This is by no means an endorsement of Bernie Sanders. We're going to point out, look, we think single payer stinks. But if you're going to say single payer stinks, say it stinks for the right reasons. And we'll point out that over in Britain right now, the National Health Service is on strike. So if you need non-emergency surgery, sorry, you're out of luck. When every doctor in the country works for the government, they decide to go and say, maybe it's a good idea to have people working for themselves and working, you know, having competition and choice and all these things. But Bernie Sanders, does he want to dismantle Medicare? Yeah, to replace it with single payer. Now, single payer stinks, but it's not like he's doing this because he wants to snatch away grandma's pills and unplug the respirator and take away Tiny Tim's cane and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really dishonest, shameless, gutter-level attack to make on Bernie. I can't believe I'm saying this, Greg, but Bernie Sanders deserves better than this. To put out Chelsea Clinton to do this, the moment people really start pushing back against this, the attitude is, oh, how can you attack a pregnant mother? Right? I mean, you know, and so Chelsea Clinton, I just find this kind of appalling. It says something about the Clintons. Did she get stronger lying genes from her mother or from her father? But when called on this, Hillary Clinton said, no, this is totally true. Bernie Sanders is trying to take away your health insurance. It's kind of fun to watch Democrats using the usual scare tactics against each other to see how they like it. But on the other hand, I feel like our politics would be better without this. And the idea of we're watching second generation Clinton attacks just strikes me as baffled. I hope Chelsea gets a lot of grief over this. And I'm guessing because she's the president's daughter, you know, there's going to be this will be she'll be seen as immune to being held accountable for this.
Is it because she was like 12 or 13 the first time the press met her? I mean, she's 35 or 36 now. When does she become fair game?
You're totally in agreement there. And I think that's my sense is that for some reason they still see her as that awkward teenager who deserved a chance to try to live as normal a life as she wanted. Oh, she jumped into this campaign, right? I mean, she's on the keel. You don't get to be a surrogate and then still be protected from counterattacks or criticism.
Well, let's get on to even sadder news, but much greater appreciation. This morning, we found out about the death of the great British actor Alan Rickman. And regular listeners of the Three Martini Lunch will know that Rickman, of course, is the villain in the official movie of the Three Martini Lunch, favorite movie, and that is Die Hard, released in 1988. Jim, I didn't know till your addenda in the jolt today that was his first movie role. He had a long stage career, acting career before that, but that was his first movie role. Loved him as a villain in Die Hard. Here's just a couple of clips, because not only was he absolutely evil, but he also had some great lines so that you could laugh at him while you could still hate him at the same time. So here's just a couple of those clips.
I wanted this to be professional. Efficient, adult, cooperative, not a lot to ask. Alas, your Mr. Takagi did not see it that way, so he won't be joining us for the rest of his life.
At another point, a character accuses him of being nothing but a common thief, and he says,
I am an exceptional thief, Mrs. McLean, and since I'm moving up to kidnapping, you should be more polite.
Terrific villain, terrific actor. He was fantastic in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, but of course, acting compared to Kevin Costner in that movie wasn't the greatest challenge, but it was still a phenomenal role. Younger people know him from Harry Potter, Love Actually, my wife would say Sense and Sensibility, so he really ran the gamut of a phenomenal actor, only 69 years old, and it's just a tremendous loss, an incredible, incredible talent, and of course, the embodiment of one of our favorite characters of all time.
Oh, you know, besides being the greatest Christmas movie of all time, Greg. look, he was an immensely talented actor. I love repeating that story that he got his big break at age 41, well past what used to be considered the time of the midlife crisis, to indicate that, no, it's not too late. On the National Review conference call this morning, there was a pretty impassioned debate about whether the greatest British voice of all time belongs to Alan Rickman or Jeremy Irons. But I'm just thinking, I mean, Greg, if you or I had been born with Alan Rickman's voice, would we have taken over the world by now?
Possibly.
I mean, just imagine being Alan Rickman And you get to go to something like McDonald's and say, I would like a Big Mac and some fries and a large Diet Coke. Not a small Diet Coke, not a medium Diet Coke. I have been very clear in my demands, and you will meet them immediately if you know what's good for you. You would terrify people all the time. It would be wonderful, you know. You could, like, say the most innocuous things, and it would sound cool and menacing. And, you know, he'll be missed, Greg.
Absolutely missed. And I think you're probably like me. My wife and I were talking about this morning. When an actor you really like dies, you think about what movie you'd like to watch as you're thinking about that. And my wife said this morning, well, we just watched Die Hard, so what about Sense and Sensibility? And I swallowed hard, and I said, well, this is about the only circumstance where I'll even consider that. And she says, but keep in mind, he's not the villain in this one. He's the good guy. And my only response was, well, does he kill anyone? And apparently the answer is no. And I hope that's not a spoiler. But
So in Sense and Sensibility, he takes over the chateau, and he's trying to steal that. Yeah. This is a brutal year, losing Bowie and Alan Rickman in you know, just a matter of days.
In a week, yeah. Same age, both of cancer. Tough time for those who love fantastic performers and who did it well for a very, very long time. So get out there, watch Die Hard if you haven't recently. And Jim, we'll have better news tomorrow, hopefully.
All right. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.